Welcome to another edition of Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr, and it's good to have you with us. And it's very cold in Texas this morning. I guess compared to a guy we talked to the other day in New York, it's nothing. But it sure is cold. It's about 30, and the wind chill brings it down to 20. We're just not used to that, us little thin-blooded folks from Texas. Let's say good morning and hi to Sherry Williams. How are you?
I'm well, Phil. Good morning.
And you're in Nashville, Tennessee.
I am.
And that, of course, is the home of the Grand Ole Opry and a great music mecca. And you're involved in, are you involved in music, or is this a hobby for you, or what is your connection?
At this point, it's more of a hobby. I was involved in it for years and decided to become uninvolved and try to make some decent money. And so right now it's a hobby. I do CDs, and I sing still. I go for money,
yeah.
But not, you know, I try to keep it down to like once a month or twice a month or something, and I sell CDs. So, no, I'm not really involved in it anymore.
Yeah, you realize, like the rest of us, that they're really, unless you can parlay your talent into a hit record or something like that, it's a pretty difficult thing to make a living doing.
Well, we had other issues, too, that just weren't practical for
yeah.
I think we could have probably, you know, if I'd kept at it, but we had personal things that we just really
yeah.
needed to resolve, so it was better to do it out of the music business.
Are you a keyboardist or
not a very good one? No, I'm a singer and a writer. I play well enough to write, you know,
okay.
things, but not
yeah.
well enough to do it for a living.
Uh-huh. No. Well, why don't we just, we've got about five songs here we're going to play, so why don't we just play a song, and then I want to talk about your life. I think you said you went to Tennessee School for the Blind, and we have been fortunate enough to meet a lot of other people that went also to Tennessee. And we'll talk about your life. You heard the first song. You want to introduce it? Did you write that?
No. This is a Faith Hill song, and
okay.
I didn't write any of it. Well, I wrote one, I think, of the songs that I sent you, my husband and I.
Yeah.
And this is just Cry. It's a Faith Hill song, and I did it about 4 years ago. I did it for a present for my husband. As a
uh-huh.
CD, went down to a karaoke studio, and we did it, and it was great fun.
Well, here it comes.
If I had just one tear rolling down your cheek, maybe I could cope, maybe I'd get some sleep. If I had just one moment at your expense, maybe all my misery would be well.
Oh,
I don't spend much time anymore listening to the radio, so I've never heard that song. But I don't see how Faith Hill could have done it any better.
Well, you're very kind. I did it because everybody has this argument about new country and old country and which is better and da-da-da.
Yeah.
I basically, you know, I think they both have their... I love the new country. I don't listen to it either. I listen to The Loft on XM, but I really like singing it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Every time I turn the radio on, if I listen 15 minutes, I hear something that just knocks me out, though. Some instrumental or some lick on some song or some lady or some guy singing something that just blows me away. But, I like Hank Snow.
My husband used to work for him.
Is that right? Yeah, that's where I am. But I like the new country stuff, and you do too, right?
The musicians are just phenomenal to me. They're just getting better every day. The young kids are like 20 years old.
Oh, yeah.
My God, they have so much soul and talent.
It makes you want to take your guitar and just step on it or something, you know.
Exactly.
You know, but because I never will be able to. I try. I never will be a good, decent guitar player, and it's just not going to happen. I don't have it. But you sing very strong. You have the power. You have that.
Yeah, I do sing loud.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you got that power. Now, your level of vision is none, right?
Absolutely none.
Totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that happen? Have you been that way all your life?
All my life. We don't really know. My mom used to tell people that she saw a UFO, I swear to God. We lived back in the hills, and she was like 19 and kind of, you know, not illiterate, but pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And she just had no idea, so she would, you know, everything. But no, they have no idea why.
No, nothing, no clue as to why you're blind. Do you have other siblings?
None. I have siblings, but none of them are blind.
Uh-huh.
And I have a dead optic nerve. That's the way it came.
Yeah, me too. If they say if my parents hadn't married, maybe that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, here I am, and it's been a good ride. Well, I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, I've loved it too.
You obviously do. Living life very well. Now, you started out at Tennessee School at 6 years old?
At six. And the first day that I came, I was me and two other people, Susie Barnes and Bernice Lowry. My middle name happens to be Bernice, and so I thought, boy, this is, I didn't know serendipitous when I was six, but, you know, I thought it was supposed to be that way.
Yeah. Somehow the gods had sent you to another lady named Bernice, and here
and
you were.
Somebody else, like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. And you met Susie on your first day.
Met Susie on my first day and woke up crying, and she carried me down to the house mother because I wanted to go. I was fine till bedtime, and then I was ready to go home.
So oh, yeah.
My pillow was wet.
Oh, bless your heart. I know I know the feeling. I went through this. A lot of us went through the same thing. They just dumped you at the blind school, and you're being punished because you're blind.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So Susie was not a newbie. She had been there before. Wow.
She had been there, I think, a year before, and she could play the piano, which I just thought was just magic. You know, I thought, oh,
yeah.
Man. And she played for me, and I thought, well, I'm going to learn to do this someday. And I never got as good as her, but I did learn to play.
Well, I bet you do well. And so they began teaching you the normal things of blind kids, or Braille and things like that?
They taught me Braille, and you know what? They had to teach me even more because my mom, it's really funny when you have a blind kid, and I don't know if many of everybody else's listeners' parents.
Yeah.
Like my mother just didn't know how to show me things, and so they had to start, you know, teaching me things like tying my shoes and, you know, things that she just basically didn't do for whatever reason.
Well, she had no way of knowing how to teach a blind child. You can't fault her for that. She didn't expect to ever be dealing with blind people. And a lot of kids are like that. So you were kind of behind the curve a little bit.
Not academic. It was really weird. And I caught up pretty quickly, you know, or I guess I did. Sometimes I still think I'm behind the curve. You know, I wake up and it's like, oh, the curve is gone.
Yeah.
She just didn't, and even things like when I got bigger, rolling my hair and, you know, things that other people's moms could teach them, she didn't seem to be able to do it. And now, you know, I show her things, and so I guess it kind of comes around.
Yeah. What about was your father present or not?
He was not, no.
So it was just you and your mom.
Well, we had five siblings.
Oh.
Yeah. It was a very sort of dysfunctional thing.
Chaotic.
Yeah, and we all had different dads, and we lived up in East Tennessee, and she didn't work, and it was just really weird. But when I was 10, she moved to Knoxville, and she got a job, and it kind of it went downhill from there.
Yeah.
So she's caught up now. She's got her act together, and she's an old lady doing fine.
So actually, once you got used to it, the blind school probably was a good...
It was absolutely my, and still is, not so much as usual or used to be, but yes, it was my safe place. Absolutely was.
Yeah, it was a good place for you to be because of the chaotic home home things. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got you learning Braille and learning some things at the Tennessee School for the Blind. Let's do another song, and this is the second one here is it Nora Jones that did this?
Yeah, I did this because my husband liked to hear me sing softly, so I did this one for him.
She did such a wonderful job, and you do also. Do you, just as a little aside, are you familiar with Diana Krall?
I love her, yeah.
She is my Ray fave. I've never met her, but I want to sit with her and visit. She is so good and so
good.
Yeah, Garrison Keillor used to have her on Prairie Home Cabana. I guess she's gotten too big to do that show nowadays. But anyway, let's do this Nora Jones song. And this song came out of nowhere. It's kind of a jazz song, and you wouldn't think that commercial radio would play it, but somebody at Clear Channel loved it, and so they played it for months on two or three radio stations here, and you probably have already all guessed which song I'm speaking of. This is called Don't Know Why I Didn't Come. Here's Sherry Williams.
Thank you.
Don't know why I didn't come. That's I hear Norah Jones there. You weren't imitating her, but you sounded a lot like her, don't you think? Kind of that, just that, I guess, by the very nature of the song.
Well, it was her kind of her arrangement. It was a little too, yeah. The arrangement was a little countryer than I meant for it to be, but that's how it turned out.
Oh, I think it's delicious. It's just very nice. So, you know the frustration of music as good as some of the rest of us, I suppose. All right, so Tennessee School for the Blind, learned Braille, learned a lot of things, went through high school there, I suppose, graduated?
I did. I was the first totally blind cheerleader, which is utterly ridiculous since it's a school for the blind, but we always had cheerleaders who could see, and I got sick of that. So I did graduate, went on to college at Lambeth in Jackson, which I hated.
Why?
And, well, I don't know. I think it was because it was so far away from TSC. I had lots of friends. I was the only blind person on campus, but it wasn't a problem at all for me.
Yeah.
But I missed everybody so bad. And so I came back to Nashville, went to Peabody, and I was fine.
once you got back to Nashville and could see some of your friends.
And I was fine.
And where was this other school that you
first... In Jackson, Tennessee, which is about 120 miles west of here.
I spent the night there on the way to Nashville one time.
Exactly.
Stopped in Jackson, Tennessee. We got married in a fever.
Yeah.
Is that the Jackson East?
Probably not. I can't imagine that was it. Although, Carl Perkins is from Jackson, so it could have been.
Yeah, so there's a Jackson in there. I think Jackson or Jacksonville in every state in the Union.
Yeah, Jackson, Mississippi.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, so you got out of high school, and what did you had, by then, had you already developed your musical talent?
You know what? I had, but I had not planned on using it. I did it pretty much for the reason that it helped me make friends, because I sang louder than anybody else, and so people, I could get people sighted dates. I have yet never dated a blind person, which is kind of weird, and I don't know why. I just don't seem to find any.
Yeah?
And my husband could see, and all the boys that I dated in high school and college could see, and mostly because I sang, and I met them, at talent shows or gigs or whatever, and that's just the way it turned out.
But you never attempted or thought about, I think I'll try to parlay this musical talent into a career and make a living doing it.
Not till I was 19. I used to go, my mom used to work at this bar, and whenever I wanted anything, when I was like 13, I would go sing for tips, and I'd make, $150, $200. And even then, I thought, that's fun. It's a good thing to know how to do, But no, not until I was 19 or 20, and I went into this bar, and I met this man who was playing piano, and he played this wonderful old rock, and it just knocked me out, and I said, I want to work with him. And that was when I decided that I would do it.
I think I'll make a living playing music. But you were already in college then.
I was. I was second year in.
And this was far away in Jackson?
No, this was when I met Buck. It was in Nashville.
Oh, this is when I'd come back.
And I did sing a little bit at Lambeth because there again, it was a way to, help me make friends and get dates. So I did it, but I didn't do it for money then. No, just for, to climb more or less.
Yeah, and it's a good door opener. We won't go into that. But I played all the bars in the world, and discovered that women like a picker.
Exactly. Even my daughter says, even an ugly musician is.
Yeah, even an old ugly musician. Yeah, women do like a picker.
If you can sing, doesn't matter exactly.
If you can sing their favorite song, well, that look comes over there. Anyway, we won't go into that. But what did you want? What did you study in college? What did you think you wanted to do?
Special education, and I did some work with autistic kids. It was weird because by the second year, I was working in this little really fancy nightclub, and I would go, we have this had at that time a place called Clover Bottom Developmental Center, we still do, and I would go and work with these kids, and they would spit on me, and because they were developmentally delayed, and I'd work with them, and then I'd jump in a car and run back to the dorm and get my fancy clothes on and go work in this really schmancy nightclub, and I was like, this is a strange way to live.
Yep.
So I did sing and work all the time that I was in college, but I didn't finish college because I decided I wanted to sing full time, and that's what I did.
So after the second year, so you dropped out?
After the third year, yeah.
Third year, my heavens, you were so close.
Pretty stupid, huh?
You were just 21 years old. How are you supposed to know anything? You know?
Exactly.
You had no experience of life, no idea what was going on. So you just dropped out and decided, well, I'll just sing for a living.
Yeah, yeah. I did. And I met, met this man named Buck Fell, and we started working together, and we worked together for about a year. And then he left, and I was just devastated because I thought, what am I going to do? And then, everybody said, well, hey, you're good enough to do it without him. You're silly if you don't try it. So I did, and I started singing in the different clubs around here. I wasn't really thinking at that time of getting a label because I thought, maybe someday, but I don't know how I'll do it. I just thought, I'm having a good time. I didn't have anybody but me. And I started singing down on Lower Broad, which now, my God, is just a huge thing because there's just people everywhere now. But then it was just after just before the Ryman closed full time and the Opry House opened.
Opryland,
Opryland. Opryland had opened, but the Opry House had not come yet. And so there were people there, on Friday and Saturday nights, but that was about it. And during the week, it was sort of, quiet. Nobody came down. It was weird. But now they're everywhere all the time, and it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Well, regardless of what you thought of music as a career, you were in the right town. You could have been discovered, and I met you. You had a lot of people who said, I'll discover you, little girl.
And you have to really watch that, yes.
Sure.
And we did. We had people that would come, and when I was working with Buck, I had several. I had a guy named Dan Hoffman who did a lot of voiceovers on commercials, and he really was interested. He was a DJ here, or had been.
Mm-hmm.
And, he wanted to take me to RCA Victor, and I don't know, but it never panned. We had a lot of things. It just never panned out.
Sure. I mean, if you get as many of those kinds of people as I used to see in Houston, Texas, because almost every night there was some guy that came in that claimed he played with Elvis Presley or Bob Wills or somebody.
Yeah.
It was always one of those, and every night. There must have been, in Nashville, quadruple that, that we came to you and tried
it was,
to.
It was, and the guy that I worked with actually was from Houston. His name is Buck Fell. He's a piano player from Houston.
So did you at that point in time when your piano player left, did you start playing your own keyboard? And
no, I hired a band, and we went to work at this place, and we worked for about 6 months, and then I did a really fun thing that I loved doing with a guy named Tom Rogers. He was a piano player, and we got to be friends, and I did just a little small club, and then went down on Lower Broadway. And that is where I met my husband, because they had all these bars and you could walk from one to the other. It was really, really neat. And there weren't very many people there then, so you weren't, afraid of being trampled.
Yeah.
I would take my cane and go down and, check out the music in the other clubs. And he was working down at a place called Demon's Den. And everybody said, close your eyes, close your eyes. Can't you just see Willie Nelson? And I said, well, no, I can't. But anyway, I got to know him, and we were kind of ready to get married in 6 months.
So this, your husband is a Willie Nelson sound-alike guy?
Well, my husband, I don't think he was. Sonny died 3 years ago almost. But
really?
He had lung cancer, and he died 3 years ago. But I should have sent you some of his things. He could be, but not to me. To me, he just has a big, burly, clear voice, it's an interesting voice, and I liked it, and that's pretty much what attracted me to him, I think, was his voice was so stand out.
That's what blind people have to go by. That's how we do it. I would love to do some shows on what attracts blind people as opposed, because sighted people, most of them, unless they're really intelligent, go strictly by looks.
Well, and at the time, I was living with this really good-looking man. And he just couldn't understand what I saw in Sonny. And I said, and he wrote a song about it, actually, called My Girl Ran Off with a Porcupine.
And you pushed a lot of buttons, didn't you, huh?
Yes.
Sounds like you had a pretty good time then, when you were in your early 20s.
we were busy.
All right, let's do another song. I don't know what this next one is. You can, do you remember what, you don't, you know, I bet
I
you don't remember what order you sent them to. What is this song
just
called?
Lucky For You.
Lucky For You. Here's Sherry Williams.
You've always said that I had multiple personalities, and I bounce around somewhere between my dreams and reality. So when you dig up the audacity to ask me,
another song I've never heard. Who did that song?
Shadaisy. I think that's the cutest song. I love it.
Shadaisy.
Uh-huh.
See, I've never... My heavens. I've never heard of her. I've never heard that song before. There's so many go by, and they all... Of course, you can't identify them, or I can't, by voice anymore. Like, you know, Ernest Tubb had a very distinctive voice. And Hank Snow and Webb Pierce, you knew it was... You knew it was old Webb when he sang, didn't you? But anyway, it's country that had Big Fiddles in it. Did you do primarily country when you were singing in bars?
I did a lot of blues, and I did a lot of really progressive, you know, things like Guy Clark. I don't know if you're familiar with.
Sure,
that.
I'm familiar with
I
Guy.
I love him, and he's a funny, funny man. I like his work. Of course, it's country, but nobody ever played it.
Not on the radio. No.
Nobody ever played.
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote one of my favorite songs called Sis Draper.
Ah.
To the tune of The Arkansas Traveler.
Right. Well, one of mine is Desperado's Waiting for a Train.
No, I love it.
Husband.
It's a wonderful song. And so you were living with a guy, and you left this guy and started dating little blind girls, decided she'd you got a lot of nerve now, don't you, huh? You
might have. Well, I guess, but, you know, I was paying the bills so I could do that.
You'd do whatever the hell you wanted to do,
exactly.
I suppose, couldn't you?
So, and I did. I met Sonny. I'm sorry, Sonny Bennett, Glenn Bennett. And he was a writer, and he'd sing songs that he wrote, and they were just very earthy and... I don't know. He was very earthy. He was such a character.
Played guitar.
He played bass.
Yeah.
And rhythm. He played good bass and fair rhythm, but he played well enough to write.
Uh-huh.
We would have writer's night, you know, and we would have people like Don Wayne, who's a dear friend of ours, who wrote Country Bumpkin, and he would come in and sing. And,
yeah.
Just all kinds of really good writers. I can't even, Harlan never came, but... Red Lane. I mean, just people that were, you know, really, really fine writers that would come into our bar and just sing.
Some of the great writers of that day,
yeah.
The country writers.
Yeah.
Of that. And so you married this gentleman and stayed with him it's all of his life.
Rest
of his life.
He died in our bed about 3 years ago.
Did you all have children or not?
We have and that's his voice, and I'm not going to answer that just now. We have a daughter named Ashley. Who's 26, and she has two daughters, Glenna Ray, who's 6 months old, and McKinley, who's 6 years old, who's a riot.
Yeah, I think last time I called you, you had grandchildren were there.
Yes, I did. Yeah, we see them every now and again.
Well, that's true. Grandchildren can be fun, they can be annoying, but they sure can be fun.
And they can be gone. That's the best thing.
Yep. All right. Now, one morning, obviously, or at some point in time in your life, you realize this music stuff ain't getting it. I need to do something.
Well, we signed with Mercury. I signed with Mercury.
Really?
We could have signed with a lot of people. I mean, we had a lot of offers. And I signed with Mercury in, I think, 77. We had a bar downtown at 4th and Broad, and we signed with them, and I recorded for 2 years and had one of my records, I think, got up to like 57 in Billboard, and
uh-huh.
The other ones didn't do anything. So,
but you and your husband owned this bar?
We for about a year and a half until we went on the road, and then we sold it, and it's now where Jack's Barbecue is, and it was in the Crosswinds. It's on 4th and Broad, two doors down from Tootsie's, and we lived above it. And that's when I signed with Mercury. We were doing the bar, and we were, you know, just...
Yeah.
It was great fun. I mean,
having
really
a big
was.
Time.
Just a good time, yeah.
Good.
But I just decided, you know, after a while... Well, I started having these weird kind of panic attack things, which is very unlike me. But the reason, I think, was because Sonny was drinking a lot, and I was, you know, it was just hard to cope. So I eventually decided I needed more control, and I didn't have enough in the music business. So I quit.
Well,
I went to school and took a vending class because I thought, you know, if I get a vending stand, you know, then I can at least do music on the side. And we did for a while. And then we worked the vending stand full time for about a year. And then we worked music for a while longer. And then we started writing. It was weird. I didn't start writing until like 1983 for real. You know, I'd write just every now and again. But then I started writing really a bunch. In 83, and we went back in the studio and did a lot of things in the next 2 years. So I guess we really didn't totally quit, you know, until 85 or 86. But
in the early 70s, or sometime in the 70s, you had a contract with Mercury Records to release four sides, or however many sides, on you.
Yeah.
And they were going to run them up the pole and see if anybody saluted, right?
Yeah, they did. And they, you know, we did that. And they were all excited, and I had a writer named Rory Burke, and he's a really nice man, and he thought one of my records, I mean, it was called Close Encounters of the Cheating Kind. Boy, they were just knew that was going to hit. You know, they were so jazzed about it, but it never did.
Boy, the title for that time is just knocked out.
He thought it couldn't lose, couldn't miss.
But it just didn't?
No, didn't happen.
Did Mercury not push you?
You know what, Reba... McIntyre and I started about the same time. We actually did our promotional pictures together, and they said, when we get Reba launched, then you're next. And what I didn't realize is, you know, it takes 2 or 3 years, and by the time they got Reba launched, I was kind of sick of waiting, so I just quit.
You were tired of the whole thing,
yeah.
So you But they were going to Reba. They decided Reba first, and then
right because she signed about 3 months before I did. So
then, we're going to do. And what a hell of a career she's had.
Yeah. I should have just shut up and waited, but you know that's my long life.
You know, oft times in my life, I think if I just shut up and waited, that one might have worked out. But I don't. That's not. I don't do that well. I can't shut up. But it's a big thing.
I'm sorry, well, my daughter's trying. Just forgive that, folks.
What was it? The guy, the comedian, said they told me I had the right to remain silent, but I didn't have the good sense to.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't know. So you just got a vending stand, you and your husband, and
yeah.
He sighted and he helped you.
He did. He helped me, and we did very well. Not as well as I'm doing now, but we did well enough. And I had a daughter, and then I taught in her school, taught music for about 7 years, and still, you know, kept the vending stand. And then we got the new vending stand that we have now, which I've had for since '94, which is in the prison. And that's the one that really took off and did well.
But you never did go back and finish your degree.
No, I never did. But, I mean, I'd have to be a lawyer or something to stoop. So, there's no reason to do it now.
You know? Well, no, not now. But you'd think that maybe earlier you might have gone back. But they let you teach. They gave you a special dispensation and allowed you to teach music at...
Yeah, it was just music, and it was in a private school, and I just taught a couple days a week. So they just went ahead and, you know, let me do it. I did it for 7 years, so didn't need it there.
And played a little music, you and your husband, a little music on the side.
Yeah, I went in the studio when we needed to, and, you know, when we'd written enough stuff, and we'd just go in and record demos with our friends. Most of them were blind. Some of them weren't, but most of them were, or just tickers around here. And we just... You know, none of it is digital, though. That's the thing. It sounds really, really terrible now.
But did you end up with cassettes and stuff of it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, of course we can dub all that to digital now.
Yeah, I need to get that done. I don't know.
Yeah, you do. Just the thing you need to do is buy a cassette deck and plug it into the line in on your computer and dump them to GoldWave or something.
Yeah, I have GoldWave, and that's what they tell me. Gordon Kent was telling me, you know, how to do it. And we went on a cruise with, I don't know if you know Gordon and his wife, Denise, and they were, you know, we were getting all this technical stuff. And they get a lot more technical than I dream of doing.
I do not know Gordon, but I would like to.
He's a funny man.
Because I'm a technical kind of an audio guy. Maybe you can put us in touch and I'll make a new friend. Who knows? All right. We're about 40 minutes in. Why don't we, let's play another song, and then we'll talk about what you're doing now. I think you alluded to the fact that the legislature was about to do some damage to your business, and we want to talk about that a little bit. Let me see if I can cue this a little better. This is live radio, friends. Oh, it's supposed to be rewinding. Rewinding, Sherry. Here we go. All right. Now it's going to start, I think. All right. What is this song called?
Rock Bottom.
Rock Bottom. Here's Sherry Williams on Blind Like Me from ACB Radio. I'm sorry I couldn't... I've never heard. Who? Where did that?
Winona Judd song.
Winona Judd. I love Winona Judd. She's just a fantastic entertainer and seems to have her head on very straight.
Well, I don't know about that, but I like her a lot.
Do you know, I was just thinking about song. Have you ever run across in your travels a lady named Terry Gibbs?
My producer for Mercury, Jerry Gillespie, wrote Somebody's Knocking.
Oh, really?
So I met her through Jerry years ago, but only that.
Yeah, you don't have any idea how to get in touch with her.
No, I don't. I think she's in Georgia somewhere doing gospel Christian music.
I think so, gospel. I sure would like, if anybody knows how to get in touch with her, email me at phil@philparr.net. Okay, so you got into the vending stand thing. Music became your hobby or your outlet, which is the best way to do music, I think.
Well, for me, it's the healthiest, I think, anyway.
I agree. If you don't have panic attacks if you're just only playing on Friday and Saturday.
You're right. Well, and you're not crazy, you know, all the time about what's going to hit and what isn't. It's just so much more relaxing.
And the vending stand business is, while it is maybe not the most profitable way to make a living, it is steady.
Well, it's been very good to me.
And has been very good to you.
Yes.
You have a vending stand now, you said, in a prison?
I have a female prison, a male prison, a mental hospital, a drug treatment center, and a halfway house.
So you have three stands or one?
Well, it's just one stand, but it's like kind of a route. It's fairly big.
You better, you know, I think you need to explain. One stand, but it's kind of a
route? Well, in Tennessee, we have sort of locations that are bid out, and they're bid out together, and this was one of those. And I understand that, and I'll get to you in a second. It just kind of grows. Mine has kind of grown. We started out with a male prison and a mental hospital, and then we took on the drug center, and, you know, so it's just sort of grown. And then we got the female prison that is in my location, too. So it's kind of gotten bigger.
So you have employees, people.
Six, yeah.
You have six employees.
Yes.
And you don't work every day anymore.
I work 4 days. I work weird. Like, I have to work today, but I don't have to work till like 3 o'clock. And I don't work 8 hours a day. And I do a lot of my work. A lot of my stuff is on computer. My inventory is all on computer. My guys, I do the ordering, and it's on computer. I do, our orders from the jail are pulled from a Scantron, like a, you know, one of those things when you take a test in college and you have to fill in the bubbles.
Yeah.
That's how my guys order, and then I put this on a scanner, and it's scanned in and pulled from a network, out on a network. And so mine is not like most vending stands that are out there.
But the actual serving of the customers is done by employees of yours.
Yes. Because we deliver a commissary in a shrink-wrapped package. That's my contract, and my employees take it out, drop it off, deliver it. Yes, I do the ordering, the computer work, the putting in of the inventory, and the paper crap. But they do all the, you know, it's really hard work now.
Now, do you prepare food at your stand?
No. We have hygiene items and packaged food items, and we sell everything from underwear to radios to, you know, potato chips.
Oh, okay, like a commissary.
Yes, exactly.
Basically. Whereas it's the stand that Susie had, they're cooking bacon.
Right,
you know,
a lot of stands in Tennessee are different, yeah.
Yeah, the cooking part would drive me nuts. I don't mind cooking, but I'd hate to do it for a lot
of
people.
My husband loved it. He yelled at me. We were making, you know, three times the money in jail that we made we had a food prep for a while.
Yeah.
And he hollered the whole time, why don't we go back to food prep?
He liked it.
Cooking.
He liked that.
Oh, loved it.
Yeah. But you sell many, many different items besides packaged food.
Yes.
And so that's somebody has to keep up with all that, and you have made that your job.
That would be me.
That would be you. Now, what, if you don't mind, what is the legislature in Tennessee trying to do to you?
Exempt the Randolph-Shepard Act from the jail. And that's probably why my phone's been ringing all morning. I've been in there about 12 years, and they tried this. I had to go to court, I think, in 97. Because they were trying to do it then, and thank God then I won it. I was like the only one who had one, but now there are probably 11 of us because they've gotten some new ones, and hopefully that will be you know, put us in a little stronger position, I hope.
Why do they want to do this?
Because the cities need the revenue. We don't pay a commission. We do give indigents to the, we have a criteria that they've established to do indigent products to the patients, or to the offenders, they call them here, who can't afford, you know, the commissary. But they have big companies who can pay a commission to the, you know, the counties, and I think that's part of it. They want the money for the city.
And so there is a chance they may do this.
Oh, yeah, there's a chance.
So you will go and testify against it?
I hope so. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope they will kill it in committee, but we don't know yet. Right now, we're meeting with the different sponsors of the bill, and like I say, I'm sure that's my son-in-law, who's also in the vending business. He's blind. And I'm sure that's him trying to call me to give me news, because I didn't tell him I was doing this morning, so they probably think somebody's kidnapped me.
Probably.
The doorbell will probably ring in just a minute.
So let me ask you. So is your daughter sighted?
No. Oh, yes, she is. And she married a blind guy that she met at Tennessee School for the Blind, which she loves about as much as I do. And they have two children who can both see. And they also have a prison, which is kind of scary, because that means the whole family will have to move in with me. Because my house is paid for.
So well, what you,
we don't
what
want
you,
this to happen.
Oh, well, you don't want that. Grandchildren are wonderful because you can give them back to their
exactly.
parents.
That's good.
That's the beauty of grandchildren.
Yeah.
So, but there is, and if they pass this, then they may take your stand away from you,
take
your vending business.
I will still probably have the hospital, which, you know, does okay.
Yeah.
But my kids would be in terrible shape, and I would too. I mean, because you get accustomed to your lifestyle, which
well, yeah,
you know,
oh yeah,
and it's kind of hard to do without it. I'm sure we could, but and especially because it's not because we're doing a bad job. If that were the reason, then you know it would be a little different.
Sure,
but that's not it. So it's kind of hard when there's nothing to measure. You know, that they don't care. Basically.
Do you have a lawyer who is advising you or not?
Sort of.
Yeah.
I think it may come to the point where we have to hire lobbyists. So I don't know yet what we're going to do. We're going to kind of strategize this weekend.
What your strategy now is to try to talk the sponsors of this bill out of presenting it.
And educate them about TBE. It's so funny because, you know, you go in there to talk to them, and they go, is this the vending in the Capitol? And so, basically, they're going to vote on something and change people's lives that they know nothing about or very little about. So we're trying to tell them, you know, what we give back to the community and the state, and just tell them who we are and what we do.
And that they're going to interrupt the lives of a lot of people. But they figure these big companies would give back more in tax revenue or something like that to the state.
Yes, or more commission to the city, I think.
It'd have to be a monetary. There'd be no other reason, because they're not just out to kill, to do bad to blind people.
They want the money.
Yeah, want the money. All right. One more time. All right. Let's play this. Let's play. We didn't. We talked over that phone number. No one heard it. Why don't we? Let's play this last song. And I think you said that you wrote this song.
Yes. I wrote this song. We were doing furniture. My husband and I, we have so much crap. And I said, you know, I hope we never have to move in our whole lives, which I haven't. And so this song is called I'm Never Gonna Move Again. This is me much younger.
I'm never gonna move again, which I agree. I'm never gonna move again. Here's Sherry Williams.
I like the feel of my easy chair, a fenced-in yard with my kid out there. I'll tell you stories from way back when, but I'm never gonna move again. A rolling rambler is what I've been, coming on smoother than slow gin. I want a rocker from way back when, but I'm never gonna move again. No, I've put down roots and I've settled in, and I'm never
A friend of ours named Giovanna Harris and my wife and I came to Tennessee a couple of times back when she and I first started going together. And I think we're going to try to repeat the magic of one of those trips, not this spring, but next spring. And we'll give you a call.
We'll go downtown and sing on Lower Broad.
We can sure do that. Giovanna sings wonderful, and
cool.
I play and sing a little bit. We'll just go do that, and I'll look forward to it. Do you have, if somebody wanted to contact you, do you have an email address you wouldn't mind giving?
I do. Sherry Williams 2, Sherri Williams, one word, the number 2, at Comcast.net.
Sherry Williams 2, all one word, at Comcast.net.
Yes.
Simple enough. Well, go take care of your legislative business.
Phone, yes.
Take care of your phone and tell them all we're sorry that we didn't realize. But you seem wonderful, and it's just, I thank Susie for getting me in touch with you. You've been a delightful interview, and bless your heart.
Thank you, Phil.
I'll see you next spring, Sherry.
All right, thanks.
Thanks much.
Bye-bye.
Wow, what a nice lady, and what a very talented person. She, that's the second person we've run across in the last couple of months that had a recording contract with a major label and was never able to parlay it into fame and fortune. Guess what I'm trying to say. So that maybe that makes the rest of us not feel so bad, because I never had a record contract of any kind, but then I never attained fame and fortune. I always thought if I go to Nashville, I could probably do all right, but I never had the nerve. And maybe the rest of you who are lots of very talented people feel the same way. It's just lots of wonderful musicians. Just let me say this. If you have a CD of your music, or you have some music on a cassette, or have it in any form, send it to me, and I'd like to interview you here on our show, Blind Like Me. We like to play music created by blind folks and feature them and salute them and applaud them. And there's just lots of us, as there are. So, anyway, Phil at philpar.net is my address. Phil, P-H-I-L, at P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R.net. Or philpar at consolidated.net will also do. Philpar at consolidated.net. My home phone number is 936-634-9500. That'll get you in touch with me. If you're not a musician and you want to be a guest on the show, like Nancy did, got an email from a lady named Nancy who lives up in the East Coast and works... I forget where she works. We're going to interview her Friday. Anyway, if you want to be a guest on the show, email me. Let me know. We're doing it all for fun. They don't pay me to do this. It's just a labor of love, and we appreciate it. Thank you much, and we'll see you next week. Phil at philpar.net, 936-634-9500. Bye-bye.